The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, where we prepare to set our clocks back 1 hour this weekend.
What?
Yes, I'm Derek Gilbert.
No one told me this.
Yes, this is the second year now that
this is the weekend we have to fall back?
Yes, it is.
No, I refuse to do it. Well, you can't make me.
Spoken like a true Hoosier. Welcome to Friday, November 5th, 2010 in the bunker. And we thank you for inviting us inside your portable audio player or wherever
we are. Or inside your head.
Yes. Wherever when we are at the
we're
moment.
We're in your head. We're in your head.
Well, a lot of stuff going on in the world this weekend as we prepare for not just the clock change, but what might be some rather ominous developments regarding Mount Merapi and perhaps even the, an all-out global war over currency.
We may be coming right down to the singularity. We don't know.
No, but we'll try to make as best sense of it as we can over
somewhere
the course of the
next half hour. Somewhere Ray Kurzweil
is
laughing. And popping pills.
Yeah.
He takes 230 pills a day.
Well, he's got to live long enough to upload his consciousness into the cosmic substrate.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, if he dies before his personality can be saved as a collection of electrons on a hard drive someplace, he's really out of luck. So he thinks. Sadly, because he believes that, he is, sadly, kind of determining his own fate.
He really is. It reminds me of that episode of Star Trek where the scientist was all excited because his new computer was able to think and therefore pilot, you know, be the new captain of the Starship Enterprise. And it was essentially his mind, his engrams had been put into the computer.
Yeah.
Therefore, the computer was thinking just as he did.
You know, I read it, stumbled onto an article the other day because I'd exchanged a couple emails with a fellow who attended a transhumanist conference in Utah, which was sponsored by the Mormon Transhumanist Association. And one of the bigwigs with the Mormon Transhumanist Association has an article at his website in which they ponder whether creating an artificial intelligence is necessarily a good thing because by virtue of being super intelligent, this supercomputer or cyborg or whatever it happens to be won't necessarily be good as we know it. It won't be virtuous. It won't be righteous. come on. That reminds me of a science fiction short story by Nicole really got into the author.
Wasn't Heinlein, was it?
No, not Heinlein. It was the story called I Have No Mouth and
Matheson?
I Must Scream. Not Matheson.
One of the other guys. Well, that guy.
Yeah, anyway, about a supercomputer that essentially wipes out humanity except for a group of six survivors for the purpose of just torturing them for all of eternity, keeping them alive forever so that this computer, which called itself, interestingly, I Am, just in constant torment.
It sounds like that movie, The Cube.
Yes, very much like that. And I'll think of the author before the end of the show because it'll drive me nuts until I come up with it. But anyway, you would think that would be a self-evident concept. Virtue, righteousness, ethics, morality don't necessarily follow enhanced intelligence. And yet there seems to be a belief among some people anyway. I don't want to try to generalize too much that the super intelligent, you know, like people who believe that these advanced races they think are visiting us must be good because they're so smart they came here.
Well, yeah.
So they've got to be better than us.
We've got outdated software, right?
Yeah, like Kurzweil says, yes.
I watched an interview with Ray Kurzweil being interviewed by Glenn Beck, of all people. You talk about the Mormons getting together for their transhumanist movement. Well, Glenn Beck interviewed Kurzweil in 2008 apparently thought he was the best thing since sliced toast or cupcakes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because Beck has that cupcake company.
Yeah, right, something right. like that. Yeah. Anyway, he just marveled on and on about Kurzweil's theories and his inventions and did everything but, you know, lay a red carpet and, mm-hmm. and inaugurate Kurzweil as the, you know, greatest man alive.
That's really interesting. And I want to do a little more reading on how the whole transhuman thing fits in with Mormon theology. It's an interesting concept. And it might actually, just as a sideline of interest, it might actually shed a little more light on the whole concept of Battlestar Galactica, which was Mormon theology set in a science fiction, in a space opera, essentially.
Well, yeah, exactly. And if you get into Caprica as well, then you right. see it's really Kurzweil. It's the transhumanist movement. It's
right.
putting our being, our essence, our soul, whatever you want to
right.
say, into a machine.
And from a transhumanist perspective, the Cylons were the good guys because it was those retrograde fundamentalist humans that refused to upgrade that needed to be wiped out.
The Cylons were the ones that worshipped one god.
Uh-huh.
The others were all polytheists.
Right, right. Huh, interesting stuff.
I
well,
know.
I'm going to talk
very,
about
very
that
strange.
In a couple of weeks on View from the Bunker on a Friday night. I'll have more details on that later. But speaking of Glenn Beck, just very quickly, he's got a new book out. Again. It's,
he
you know,
puts out like 12 books a month. I don't know.
Well,
it's a lot.
He just recently had the big release of his novel, The Overton Window.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's got this new nonfiction book that he's put out. And he had, what, a couple
and
of books last
year. And he said
year.
That he spoke to 34 experts to write this book. This book looks like it's about an inch and a half, 2 inches thick
mm-hmm.
in hardcover. It is a – and he even said it had – something like 20, 30 pages of citations and bibliography and all that in the back from footnotes, I don't know, whatever. He said fine print.
Yeah.
And that's
well,
usually footnotes or something. And that means that there is a lot of citing going on, which means a lot of people are quoted
mm-hmm.
or articles are cited.
A lot
Who
of research.
Who did all that research?
Yeah.
And did he really write it?
Well, we're calling BS on this one because it we have some experience with how long it takes to write a book. The God Conspiracy came out at about 400 pages, and I know how long it took me to write that
mm-hmm.
Around working a full-time job. Well, Beck has essentially two full-time jobs.
Yes, he does.
Because we also know from experience how long it takes to prepare a radio show. I only did 2 hours a day in Columbia, Missouri, and you saw how much time
mm-hmm.
it took me to prepare for 2 hours a day.
Yes, and I was helping you.
Yes.
And I
yes.
know Beck does have people who
a
are
staff,
helping him
sure.
with that. Yes, exactly. But you still have to actually be on the air for that time of day.
The time that
day.
You're there, right.
Yes.
So he's got 4 hours a day where he is physically on the air. And then he's got the prep time, which easily is another 4 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then he commutes from New York City to Connecticut, which is probably another 3 hours out of his day.
And he has young children at home.
And he has young children at home.
And he's writing these books. And he's
yeah.
appearing in theaters. And he's doing
right.
you know, the various shows.
Exactly. You get this. You get the picture here. Somebody is helping in ghostwriting and helping to promote Glenn Beck as a product.
Well, he's the hot property right now,
yes,
so I'm betting his publishers
so,
are happy to
anyway,
do whatever deal they have to.
Whoever wrote the book, good on him.
Well, yeah, and someday we'll find out. You remember the old, you know, like, well, who was it that was the theory that Obama didn't write his book? It was actually
– Oh, the fellow from Kansas City, Jack Cashel, did some real good research in it. Cashel wrote the book First Strike about the downing of TWA Flight 800.
And that's right. That's why the name is so
right.
familiar.
Cashel
yeah.
has written some very, very good and I think – well-researched investigative pieces. He writes periodically for WorldNet Daily. His website is Cashel, CASHILL.com. And he wrote a couple of really well-researched pieces on the textual evidence that Dreams of My Father was ghostwritten probably by the fellow from Chicago, William Ayers.
That's right.
Yeah. And he showed from things that we know for a fact that Obama wrote, and compared it to Dreams of My Father. And the difference is night and day. The things that Obama himself has written are very pedestrian, somewhat clunky, you know, not incompetent, just not very, I mean, they're just standard. They're just average.
Mm-hmm.
Dreams of My Father is very well written. The prose has a poetry to it. It flows. It's extremely well written. And, you know, Cashel just says, look, you know, I've submitted this to experts, people who are forensic experts in this field to determine the true authorship of documents for, you know, in legal proceedings. And the evidence suggests that Obama was not the author of Dreams of My Father.
So. Well, perhaps Telly wrote it.
Telly
the teleprompter.
Oh, well.
Well, we've got to get to the news.
Yes.
We'd love to just continue talking about that. We spent most of last night talking about Obama's trip. But Indonesia is also on his trip, his itinerary. And Indonesia is where Mount Merapi is continually erupting. It's day 11 now, and it is really taken off. As of this morning, there were stories about a volcanic eruption that is spewing lava, superheated gas, and at least 122 dead.
Ooh.
This is not going well. In fact, there's an article that we will link to in the show notes, but it is at Instapaper, where we go to look at the sites that I have sort of taken note of during the day as I read through. German newspaper Der Spiegel has written an article about some scientists who believe that there is such a huge pool of magma underneath Merapi right now that any eruption, and it does seem imminent, I mean, we're talking about a major, major eruption, not just some lava coming out, that it would be potentially three times as big as the 1815 one, which was huge. 1815 was something that darkened the skies all over the world.
According to this expert, the Tambora volcano of 1815 was the biggest eruption in the last 10,000 years. And it led to a cooling of the climate globally, which ironically might actually make climate warming alarmists happy.
Forgive me for saying that. I know what you were saying, though. It may make them feel like they're
at least we've been given a reprieve. But again, yeah, that's even too snarky for yeah, so anyway.
I love you.
Like I said, try sometimes to be snarky, and when you're dealing with a situation that could literally kill thousands of people, this is not the time to be funny. So my apologies.
Can I talk about somebody who does do radio and television who does think himself very funny?
Sure.
And who just lost his job?
You know,
Keith Olbermann.
I liked him when he was on ESPN.
He was good then. He was funny then.
Well, it's one thing to see somebody deflating the balloons of professional athletes who are being paid a lot of money and seem to believe that they deserve every single penny of it. It's another thing when he is taking that same attitude and employing it in a very partisan manner, in a very mean-spirited way, over and over again. Now, Olbermann, and the funny thing about this story is that actually he's been suspended without pay indefinitely by MSNBC for donating to the congressional campaigns of three Democratic candidates. Now, wait a minute. What about all of the donations in kind that he's given to the Democratic Party over the last few years via his commentary?
Exactly. He has promoted the Democrat Foundation, the platform, for years now,
has
everybody at MSNBC. So I don't know why on earth they're picking on Olbermann now, except perhaps he's done something to tick somebody off.
That's probably what it is. It's so there's another reason behind the scenes here. Because you're right, the reason that's given doesn't make a lot of sense. If in fact he was suspended for violating MSNBC's ethics policies by donating to Democrats and showing himself to be unfair and unbalanced, come on. It'd be interesting to see if something else comes out behind this story. By the way, back to the Indian Ocean real quick. I noticed that the Obama administration made a point yesterday of saying, you know, look, the president is not being accompanied by 34 warships to India. These are stories that are coming out of India. And
why would India make this up?
Well,
who's feeding this information to India? They're not just coming out. Hey, let's say this about him. They like him over there.
They do like him over there. And you know, we're not carrying any water for the American press, which doesn't do as good a job as it should of being a check on the power of our politicians. But when you consider that the average carrier group, I mean, you know, and a carrier group is the most powerful strike force in the United States Navy, the average carrier group only has 10 ships. So why would we send the equivalent of three carrier groups to India? And that doesn't make any sense.
I know it really doesn't, but you still have to ask the question.
Yeah, why is the story being floated?
What's the source of the story? Exactly.
What's the source of the story? Who's floating it out there? And so anyway, it may not be the case that he's actually being accompanied by 34 warships. However, it is probable that he is being accompanied by a pretty hefty retinue, which typically accompanies any president that has to go anywhere. I mean,
they have bought out the Taj Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the hotel that was the site of the Mumbai bombings, the attack, the terror attack.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably is a symbolic thing that the president has decided to stay in that hotel.
Right.
Sort of an in-your-face to the terrorists.
Mm-hmm. We are not afraid, right.
And because of security issues, he had to buy out every room.
Yeah. And there's a little detail I learned during the Bush administration that I guess when you think about it, it makes sense, but we don't want our adversaries knowing anything more about our powerful government officials than they can possibly learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so to prevent them from learning anything at all about, when I was in Scouts, they had a motto about the way we're supposed to leave our campsite. It said, take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but footprints.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's essentially the approach, I think, of the Secret Service when it comes to the president visiting someplace. They bring a porta potty for the president.
Oh, that's right.
They bring porta potty
for the president. They did talk about that during the Bush administration.
Because they don't want
to leave
anything. Yes,
behind.
That could be analyzed to find, we can tell from the DNA analysis here that such and so is going on here. So, yeah. So, anyway, mm-hmm. just an interesting little side note there. But, and rightly so. I mean, there are people out there who would dearly love
to
take out an American president.
So, I completely agree with that. But I do think it seems to me that he has taken an awful lot of stuff and it's costing an awful lot of money.
Yep. And again, kind of an interesting time to do it.
But you know what?
Yep.
If he had just $139, he could purchase the free wand and use the 0 point energy that it emits and make his life so much better. He may not even need that teleprompter if he had this wand.
If he waved
a wand, a magic wand.
This was something that was sent to me by a listener, and forgive me that I didn't think to note the listener's name, and it's escaping me at the moment. So, again, this is another name I'll remember later.
I will see if I can track that down.
Yeah, but anyway, the wand is alleged to be a 0 point energy wand. Now, 0 point energy is a concept taken from the experiments of Nikola Tesla, which essentially means you can draw energy from the air itself.
And it has nothing to do with time wave zero, just in case you're wondering.
Right, right. So this wand is supposed to align the energy of your body and supposedly is developed over 30 years of research with quantum physicists and so forth. It's a 21st century snake oil is what it is. But because it has these new age overtones of changing the energy imprint on your body and getting your chakras into alignment and all that other stuff, it is getting into a spiritual realm that your typical home remedy or over the counter medication does not.
It was sent to you by Tim Curry.
Oh, yeah, okay. Timothy Curry. not the guy from...
No, it was Tim Curry.
Rocky Horror
We're pretty sure
show.
It was Tim Curry. It was just a jump to the left.
Thank you, Timothy.
By the way, this has been endorsed by Deepak Chopra.
Yeah, one of Oprah's favorite
I know.
Guys.
Rhymes with Oprah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Chopra and Oprah.
It's essentially... And the reason they call it Free the Wand is that apparently devices like this have been sold through multi-level marketing for some time now. And this particular company is offering this wand
for just $139.
And again, it is an attempt to play on the growing – well, the new age beliefs of a segment of our population to offer what purports to be a cure for what ails you. Just like the snake oil of the 19th century,
look when you're
supposed to.
Your snake needs oiling. You got to oil it.
Yeah. But that's just a little WD-40. Usually, this supposedly is a wand that will relieve pain, facilitate healing, and energize you on a cellular level. But again, because it's more than that, it goes into the whole. You know, the whole new age, you know, energy.
So much of that stuff is, you know, I know it's all over the place anymore. And you're looking at the picture. Are you looking at the picture on my, are you looking at me?
Well, yes.
I have an article up that I put at PID News this morning that I just have to talk about. It's a story coming out of Canada. A young man boarded a plane and was dressed in disguise as an old man.
Pretty bad disguise.
It apparently fooled people enough to get him on the plane because he went back into the bathroom and changed into took off the mask, removed the mask, and emerged as his young self. Now, my point was this could have been, while this
maybe
seems...
he used the wand and re-energized himself at a cellular level.
That's it.
Yeah.
It was Kurzweil.
He'd forgotten his pills that morning.
Yeah. Well, the reason I brought this up is because this could, while it's comical, it could have been a test.
Yes.
Because the mask could have contained who knows what.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to say what it was composed of, you know, was... But anyway, he managed to get into the plane with something that could have been dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that the air traffic controllers up there, that they're all well aware of that. I'm looking out to see what other news. First U.S. targeted assassination in Gaza. Oh.
That was one that we wanted to talk about, yeah.
I'm glad I saw that then.
This is another story that was forwarded to us by a listener that the United States launched a missile I believe it was Tuesday this week, that took out a gentleman who is supposed to have been a representative of, what are they calling this, Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula?
ACAP.
ACAP, yeah.
That's what I call it. I don't know that they are. It's AQAP,
right.
Al-Qaeda Arabian Peninsula.
Now, it's not uncommon for us to hear in the news that Israel, using helicopters, has launched a missile strike against suspected terrorists in Gaza. This is the first time that an American warship in the Mediterranean fired a missile to take out a target, and by target I mean a man, in Gaza. 27-year-old Mohammed Jamal Namnam.
That name sounds made up.
Well,
Namnam.
N-A-M-N-A-M.
It's man backwards.
Well,
I don't know, but anyway.
That's as it's reported by DEPCA.
I know that.
So
read them, folks.
Yeah, this took place Wednesday, and the counterterror sources reporting to DEPCA, which is an Israeli intelligence-based news site, says that this gentleman was in Gaza to plan, organize, and execute another terror attack, this time against American forces serving with the Multinational Force and Observers Organization, or MFO, which is in the Negev, the desert, in the southern part of Israel. But anyway, the significance of this, of course, is that this is the first, well, twofold, I think. First, that this is the first American attack on Palestinian soil, on Palestinian territory.
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, have you noticed that with the next day air bombings or whatever, I don't know what the media has tagged those, you know, the UPS packages that were intercepted and have been attributed to Yemen. Isn't it interesting that Yemen is, and American government officials very quickly stepped up to say, well, this is probably the work of the sheikh. Was it Al-Awlaki?
Mm-hmm.
Al-Awlaki, I'm not pronouncing it well, who was the fellow that American, that administration officials admitted is on the president's hit list.
Exactly.
He's an American citizen on an assassination list. And American officials now are very conveniently stepping up and saying, this guy's probably responsible.
Well,
read between the lines.
He should get a car from Israel then.
Yeah, that was one of the interesting little tidbits in the DEPCA article, that very recently Israeli officials began allowing new cars to be imported into the Gaza Strip for the first time in years, knowing apparently that they would be snapped up by the leaders of Hamas as status symbols. Well, apparently those Hamas leaders have figured out now that, oh, there was a reason the Israelis let us have these cars. They're marked. They're tagged. They've got the homing devices on them. And that's how, apparently, this American missile found its mark.
Well, what I find so interesting is that it was a missile from a ship that took him out.
Yep.
And not a drone.
Right. Yeah. It was not a Predator drone. This was launched from an American cruiser, I believe, in the Mediterranean Sea.
I mean, that's extremely accurate software. Yep. To be able to launch from that far away and have it hit a moving car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you've got to wonder, when you're aiming at a car and you're trying to destroy the car and obviously the person in it, how much collateral damage do you cause?
Exactly.
How do you limit the damage to the confines of that
vehicle?
Well,
you don't know. It may be that there was none, but you don't know.
Right, right.
With a drone, at least you're following it, and perhaps they had a drone there watching it,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps that was how they targeted it. I don't know, but...
Yeah, well, a significant development, and again...
The next car you buy... With 0% down and with a government refund, you might want to think about it.
That's a good point. But again, he's a member of ACAP, we are told. And of course, ACAP, they are saying, points back to this sheikh who inspired, we are told, the Fort Hood massacre.
Yeah, well,
and
once so again, I know we keep saying it,
killing.
Watch Syriana.
Yeah, it's closer to reality than most of us would like to believe. Well, there is, what else do we have here?
Have you done any writing on NaNoWriMo?
I have not done any writing yet on NaNoWriMo.
I haven't for the last 2 days. I started out pretty well, but we've been putting together desks and other things the last 2 days. But I just wanted to let people know that I have been enjoying my afternoon, not by writing. I should have been doing that. But instead, I was reading something else, something that someone else wrote, and mm-hmm. it's Dave McGowan.
Yeah.
Whom you have spoken with on your show in the past. In fact, back in Colombia, mm-hmm. you interviewed him at your radio station back there. And he has a website. It is
Dave's Web.
Web. Yeah. I couldn't see for the little microphone. Our microphones have little protective jackets that are like, you know, like.
Yeah, full foam jackets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things. These little cages. Dave's Web. And we will put the link to the entire URL in the notes because he's writing about the Apollo mission and did we really go to the moon? I'm having the best time reading this because he writes very, very well.
He does.
It is an enjoyable read and he makes some salient points that I think our listeners will find very interesting.
Yeah. We need to
have him back on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially following the interview guests that I've got coming up tonight. Because he wrote the book, which we referred to just a couple of weeks ago, a couple of shows ago, called Programmed to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted a link to...
Is that the one about Henry Lee Lucas?
Henry Lee Lucas and others. But the early chapters deal with pedophile rings, organized pedophile rings, where nobody seems to get punished. When they are exposed, for some reason... The accused never seem to suffer the full force of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there was a link put in the show notes of one of our recent shows called The Pedophocracy, because it seems like there are powerful people covering this up. Well, anyway, that's the discussion of the first hour. For the first hour tonight, Nick Bryant, investigative journalist, has written a book about the Franklin cover-up, the Franklin Credit Union scandal from Omaha, Nebraska, about 25 years ago, one of the darkest and most disturbing incidents in the history of the United States. And
it definitely shows the spiritual battle that is going
yes,
on, and
it
that's
does.
Why you want to talk to him.
Right.
And that's why if you want to, you know, if you got an extra, what do we pay for that book,
$11? About $16.
Okay.
Hardback.
Well,
not a
it's
bad
worth
price
it.
For a hardback.
It's not a bad price, and Amazon got it right out, shot it right out to it.
Yep. And hour number two, we'll talk about why the rebuke to President Obama probably means nothing in terms of the overall direction of the country. Patrick Wood, co-author of Trilaterals Over Washington, joins me after 11 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody.
Yeah.
There we go.
You hit the wrong one. I love you.
I love you, sweetheart.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivs 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.